Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, hosted by the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver, and we are here to celebrate summertime. We call this the Pun in the Sun show, and I promise you that will be the only pun in the show unless we slip up and do another pun accidentally.
Don't you think you'll do one for the second fractional portion?
All I did was I set a plan for how the radio show was going to go, and right of the way,
a plan
I'm getting
that clearly flat. Wasn't thought through.
Thanks to our listeners at True Talk Internet Radio Show with me, apparently to obstruct the flow of the show, as well as to tell you
it will flow.
About our web presence, I'm sure it will. From the University of Kentucky is telecommunications guru Rick Phillips. Now, I want to point out, some of our more observant listeners may notice, Rick is not entirely all there.
It's actually an imposter.
So
Tony,
this is
got a new
the
guy.
Summer cold version of Rick to tell you about our web presence.
Well, Tony, you know you can get the audio of the shows, no matter how bad I sound, you can still get them at WMKY.org. WMKY.org. So again, go there, do a search for Health Matters. You'll find it. You'll find all the shows, the more recent ones, MP3 format. Download them, listen to them right there. Sign up for the podcast. Have them delivered to you automatically. They typically come out 3 to 4 days after the show first airs. If it first aired on Saturday morning, then you might expect to see it around Tuesday at the latest Wednesday. So again, sign up for that podcast. You will enjoy having Health Matters delivered directly to you. And that's a promise from Tony. And not me, from Tony, no. So after you've done the audio, after you've listened and you decided, you know what, that's something I want to interact with. I want to know more. I want to be a part. Well, we have a fan page on Facebook. It's facebook.com/HM Radio Show, one word. Go there. You'll find information that we talk about on the show. You'll talk about research that comes up in between shows that may or may not get talked about. You'll have the opportunity to comment. You can leave us feedback. You can leave us show topics. You'll be amazed at your ability to interact with the staff. We will certainly, listen to what you say and then let us know what you want to hear. Again, that's at facebook.com/HM Radio Show.
Our sponsor for today's show, sunscreen.
Couldn't it have been cough drops? Really? Come on, Tony. Help me out. Work with me here.
Sunscreen. Go we got to be audience responsive. And this is really hard for me to do with a straight face, but this is the CDC Q&A on skin cancer protection. Yeah, it's a little curvy, but okay. So I'm just going to read some questions here and give you the CDC answers to these questions on skin cancer prevention, and that is really about sunscreens. Question, how can I protect myself from the sun's UV rays?
You can't.
Health Matters answer, but don't go out when the sun's out. Apparently, that's not a good enough answer. When possible, avoid outdoor activities during midday when the sun's rays are strongest, usually 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Also, and this is how you are cool on the beach, wear protective clothing such as a wide-brimmed hat, long-sleeved shirt, and long pants. Chicks dig the wide-brimmed hat, long-sleeved shirt, and long pants.
And that worked for you, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. For eye protection, wrap around sunglasses that provide 100% UV ray protection. Always wear broad-spectrum protection against both UVA and UVB rays sunscreen. And a lip screen with at least an SPF 15. Apply generously 30 minutes before going outside. Reapply after swimming or sweating. We cannot imagine that you would sweat in your long shirt and your long
pants.
What
about after kissing, Tony?
Didn't mention it. Apparently you can kiss away with your SPF lip protection.
You really think that's true? No, you can't kiss away,
Rick,
okay? Come on.
Honestly, let me just say, when I was a sun-worshipping teenager, I was not really worried about whether or not I would have to reapply my lip screen after kissing. It was not on the radar screen. I was not even close.
I want to know the reason why. Never mind, just move on.
I would go to the beach with my family. Honestly, I'm thinking, did I ever go to the beach where there was a chance to interact with beach babes? The answer is no. In my teenage career, I did not. I was born and raised in rural Kentucky, and when I went to the beach, it was with my family. There you go. Second question. Question two. What can excessive exposure to UV rays do to my health? The answer to that, UV exposure, most important environmental factor in the development of skin cancer and a primary factor in the development of lip cancer. Getting some sun exposure can yield positive benefits. Excessive and unprotected exposure to the sun can result in premature aging and undesirable changes in your skin. And I think if you've ever seen anyone who spends a lot of time out in the sun, you can understand that. Such exposure has been associated with various types of skin cancer, including melanoma. Also, cataracts. UV rays have been associated with several eye conditions, but cataracts mainly. Question 3, what is the UV index?
Is that something you trade on Wall Street?
It was developed by the National Weather Service, Mr. Smarty Pants, and the Environmental Protection Agency provides a forecast of the expected risk of overexposure to UV rays and indicates the degree of caution you should take. You're wondering, what degree of caution should I take?
Right.
They say, here's the degree of caution you should take.
3 degrees?
Yeah. It takes into account clouds and other local conditions. The level of danger is calculated for the basic categories of the index are for a person who burns easily and tans minimally. For this person, an index value of 5 or 6 represents a moderate possibility of overexposure.
Yeah, I've never heard of such a thing.
Yep. We will have more Q&A from the CDC on skin cancer prevention. Put on your broad brim hat, your glasses, your long sleeve shirt, your long pants, and enjoy the beach.
Come to think of it, you put all that on, you're not going to need a lip screen. You're not going to need it.
Well, no, wait a second. You may have the wrong idea about lip screen, Rick. Those of us who seem to have to fight off swarms of kissing, that lip screen is different.
Let me rephrase that. This lip screen is, you're not going to need to replace it.
I would absolutely agree with you on that. Now, we happen to be, this Sunday morning, if you're listening to the rebroadcast, we are broadcasting from one of the most corrupt states in the United States, according to the June 10th issue of the Public Administration Review.
I thought you were going to say we were broadcasting in Technicolor.
Nope. This is a study from researchers at the University of Hong Kong. How dare they? But also Indiana University, estimates the corruption on a state level costs Americans in the 10 most corrupt states an average of $1,300 a year.
Some more than others.
Yep. They studied more than 25,000 convictions of public officials for violation of federal corruption laws over the past 30 years, as well as patterns in state spending to develop a corruption index that estimates the most and least corrupt states in the union. Now, what do you think is the most corrupt state in the United States?
I know the answer.
Because you're sitting there looking at it. So not fair. First of all, you would think, and you grew up there, Rick, so I know you're thinking about this, Louisiana. Louisiana actually comes in at number 2, the most corrupt state, according to researchers at the University of Hong Kong and Indiana University. The most corrupt state is Mississippi, ranked number 1. The second most corrupt, Louisiana. Number 3 on the list is Tennessee. Number 4, thanks to, I think, Blagojevich, is Illinois.
And that you think that's all Chicago?
I think a lot of it is. I didn't look at their methods. But
I mean, because really, most of the other states on this list are all rural.
Yep, that's a good point. Number 5, Pennsylvania. 6, Alabama. 7, Alaska. 8, South Dakota. And Kentucky comes in at number 9, just ahead of Florida. Researchers found for 9 of the 10 most corrupt states, overall state spending higher than the less corrupt states. South Dakota, the only exception. It could actually, if you attack corruption, you could save money. I mean, it makes sense. We've always thought that in other things. Why not in state government? Also, spending in the states that were corrupt was different from the less corrupt states. States with higher level of corruption are more likely to favor construction, borrowing, correction, and police protection at the expense of education, health, and hospitals. And that's where it starts to impact health care, is that education money, that health money goes to these big spending projects that are worked out in a corrupt government. Construction spending, they mentioned, especially on big infrastructure projects, let's just call that RUP arena, is particularly susceptible to corruption because the quality of the large non-standard projects is difficult for the public to gauge. So I'm not saying RUP arena is corrupt. I'm not saying the people that are working on RUP arena is corrupt, but I'm saying a big project like that is really a great
opportunity.
It's an opportunity. It is a garden, and that garden grows corruption. Now, if you look at the top least corrupt states, number 1 is Oregon, number 2 Washington, number 3 Minnesota. That is, these are northern states and midwestern states. 4 Nebraska, 5 Iowa, 6 Vermont, 7 Utah, 8 New Hampshire, 9 Colorado, and 10 Kansas. Now, what I did, just kind of just for jollies, no
really
other particular reason, I looked at the life expectancy of people who are in the corrupt states versus people in the not-so-corrupt states.
Well, what'd you find there, Mr. Wizard?
You know, when Rick gets a viral infection, he just gets kind of crabby. I don't know how this virus affects you, but it's pretty clearly the voice is not so hot. And also, I think your attitude toward the program has deteriorated as the vocal quality dropped.
The worst part about it, Tony, is I think tonight we typically record this show in advance. So tonight, I think the cat may get out of the bag because this may be a long-lasting virus.
So, yes, we may stay tuned next week to see if Vic's
still got it. Let's
voice
see.
Recovers any at all. But back to the story. Again, the number one most corrupt state in the nation actually, interestingly enough, has the nation's shortest life expectancy, life expectancy.
They're at the number 50 on all the lists we talk about all the time.
Yep.
I mean, come on.
Life expectancy in Mississippi was 75.4. As a matter of fact, if you look at those bottom 10 states, the bottom 10 most corrupt states in the country, going from Mississippi all the way to number 10 at Florida, the life expectancy of those, as Rick mentioned, is at the bottom of the national life expectancies. In fact, no state has a life expectancy greater than 79.5 years, and that's South Dakota. Absent South Dakota, Illinois at 79 is the next, and then they drop down to 78, and Kentucky, of course, comes in there with our life expectancy of 76, well below the national average. Now, look at the least corrupt states. The lowest life expectancy is actually Oregon with 79.5. Minnesota has a life expectancy of 81. Utah, 80.2. New Hampshire, 80.3. Vermont, 80.5. So we have five states. Colorado is 80. We have five states with a life expectancy of 80 years or above in those top 10 least corrupt states. So corruption, one, costs money, and two, corruption is associated with, not necessarily causes, but is associated with a lower life expectancy. Now, you can look at that a lot of ways. These states are poorer.
Interesting, Tony, though, but two of the 10 least corrupt states just legalized marijuana. Think about that for a second. Let's give it a couple years. Let's reevaluate. Let's see if that life expectancy is changing. And let's see if the corruption levels are staying the same.
Yeah. By the way,
not saying marijuana is going to corrupt the government or anything, but I mean, you know.
Oh, no,
I don't know. I just, you have to wonder.
It is a great segue into our second fractional portion because we're actually going to spend that time talking about some of the already intended and unintended consequences of both recreational and medicinal marijuana. We'll talk more about that. But before we leave this subject, I just want to point out to our radio fans, there is a kind of a mass of things that happens when you're at the lower end of the socioeconomic scale. You have an exodus of leadership. Your leaders that are left apparently are more likely to be corrupt. They spend more money on things that don't really pay off for the state, and so you wind up with that cycle then of poor education, loss of leadership, corruption, and then a lower life expectancy as a result. It is a hideous thing, especially when you're in the middle of it, to see the bad decisions coming out that then lead to loss of life and loss of health on the citizens of the state. And on that happy note, we're going to leave you. You're listening to Health Matters on Moorhead State Public Radio. Stay tuned for our second fractional portion.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, hosted by the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. Additional information on the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center is available at 606-783-6506 or online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
I'm Rick Phillips.
I don't know who you are, man. You know, it was annoying the first fractional portion. Now you've gotten into sexy, which is really disturbing. You're creeping me out.
Oh, Tony, don't talk like that.
I am Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Pun in the Sun show. We do not have a pun for our second fractional portion. We didn't need one until our co-host decided we did. Our sponsor for the second time, sunscreens, and this is the CDC information on sunscreens and sunburns and skin cancer. And we are into, I think we're up to around question six or so. I'm making
you
up the numbers
ask me
as
to
I
count,
go.
So I didn't keep count.
I understand. It was all my fault. That's right. Just point that out. This is about tanning and burning. Question number X plus one. What does a suntan indicate? Why does the skin tan when it's exposed to the sun? And these are the sort of things you might sit around and ponder while you're sitting on the beach, I guess. The penetration of UV rays into the skin's inner layer results in the production of more melanin, and that melanin moves toward the outer layers of the skin and becomes visible as a tan. According to the CDC, a suntan is not an indicator of good health. Some physicians consider the skin's tanning a response to injury because it appears after the sun's UV rays have killed some cells and damaged others. Yeah, it's radiation effects, I guess.
So having a nice bronze tone to you really doesn't mean anything other than you've had some issue.
You've got dead skin there, I guess. Or
yeah,
dying
dead, dead something.
Then it's question number X plus two. What does it matter what kind of sunscreen I use? CDC says sunscreens come in a variety of forms, such as lotions, gels, and sprays. There are plenty of different options. There are also sunscreens for specific purposes, such as the scalp, sensitive skin, and for use on babies. Regardless of the type, be sure that the one you use blocks both UVA considered aging rays that make your skin older and also contribute to some types of skin cancer, and UVB, which are the burning rays, and it offers at least an SPF of 15. Let's say it again. Any sunscreen you use protects against UVA and UVB, and it has an SPF, a sun protection factor, of 15 or greater. That leads to our very next question, question X plus 3. What does a sunscreen's SPF rating mean? According to the CDC, they're assigned a sun protection factor according to their effectiveness in protecting you from UV rays. Higher numbers indicate more protection. As a rule of thumb, always use a sunscreen with an SPF of greater than 15.
Well, now, Tony, isn't anything below 15 considered a tanning oil?
Wow, Rick, you know so much more about tanning than I do. I have no idea.
I mean, if you go look at, like, the 8s, they have, like, SPF 8. Those are, like, they call them on the front, they like say, like, tanning oil. I mean, while they're really kind of blocking some of the harmful effects, they're not blocking a whole lot of them because they allow you to tan.
Gotcha. Question X plus 4, do sunscreens need to be reapplied during the course of the day?
Only on your lips, apparently.
Well, isn't that just silly, I mean, I know they're trying to be kind of chatty here, but that's a silly question. Recently developed sunscreens are more resistant to loss through sweating and getting wet than previous sunscreens, but you should still apply generously 30 minutes before going outside and reapply frequently, especially during peak sun hours or after swimming, exercising, or sweating for any reason.
So, Tony, when you go to the beach, are you that guy with the white nose?
No, I actually, what I do is very simple. When I go to the beach, we go for a walk early in the morning, we do indoor stuff midday, and then we go out in the evening. We just don't go out when the sun's out.
So you're a fuddy-duddy.
Well, no, I have a lot of fun. I don't wear hats and long-sleeve shirts on the beach.
Hmm.
I just wear what I want, but I just get inside before the sun gets really hot. Final question, X plus 5. Some cosmetic products claim to protect you from UV rays. Can they? According to the CDC, there are cosmetics and lip protectors that contain some of the same protective chemicals as sunscreens, but not all these products meet the SPF 15 standard and do not offer protections by themselves. So there is some interesting information from the CDC, some pretty basic stuff about sunscreens. Remember to get your sunscreen this summer, or better yet, just stay out of the sun midday and you will do okay. We do not, and let me just say, we'll hit this again in our third fractional portion, but one of the key things is you do not want your kids and your teenagers to get a blistering sunburn. That turns out to be a very, very bad idea.
Well, I mean,
aging aside, chronic skin changes aside, kids should not get blistering sunburns.
But a blistering sunburn is a third degree burn, right?
Not necessarily third degree.
I mean, isn't that the sign of a third degree is blistering?
No, the third degree, actually, the skin is dead.
Second degree.
Yeah, it'd be a second degree. But you really.
And that's why we have you on the show.
You really do not
right
want that. There you go.
That's why we could not do this without you, Tony.
Well, also, I've got all the material.
Oh, yeah, there is that.
All right. So we talked about corruption, our first fractional portion. We want to update you on marijuana because this is
We're following it closely.
This is really a fascinating story, Rick. You start to realize just exactly how wrong this, and I'm not talking about whether marijuana is more harmful or less harmful than other types of drugs and so forth, but this is a bizarre process we've done, and we are now seeing the after effects of it, and I'll explain what I mean as we go. First of all, medical people are scrambling to figure out exactly how good or how bad marijuana is. To be honest with you, you know, there was no research being done because it was a Schedule I controlled substance with no known benefits, and it was very difficult to get any research off the ground at all. So we have this very serious dearth of scientific information on marijuana prior to getting it released. The other thing is the conditions of its release were just suddenly it was available to everyone without really anyone monitoring the health effects of the legislative changes. That is, you know, their doctors are watching, but there was no system of monitoring set in place to ask what will happen to the public health when we do this. So here, June 5th, the New England Journal of Medicine has a review on what we know about the health effects of marijuana use. First of all, conditions that you can treat with marijuana. Glaucoma. Evidence of benefits of marijuana in patients with glaucoma is fairly consistent and also probably due to its ability to have a transient drop in your eye pressure. Again, glaucoma is an increased pressure in the eyes. It puts pressure on the optic nerve, and it leads to changes in the vision due to damage to the optic nerve. There are other treatments that are more effective, and more researchers need to establish whether or not there are certain chemicals in the marijuana cigarettes that may have some effect on pressure and also some beneficial effect for the nerve cells of the eye. Right now, we don't know. But it does have a beneficial effect of glaucoma. It is not the preferred drug for that, but it does help. Nausea. Nausea and vomiting associated with chemotherapy, one of the first medical uses. It is an effective antiemetic, that is anti-vomiting agent, in people undergoing chemotherapy, but it's probably better at suppressing nausea than it is suppressing vomiting. And there may be some other chemicals that we haven't even figured out yet that may actually help the THC in the marijuana to suppress nausea. It's been used for AIDS-associated wasting syndrome, where they're unable to eat, they lose weight. Smoking or ingesting cannabis improves appetite and leads to weight gain and improved mood and quality of life among people with HIV/AIDS, but no long-term studies, no strong evidence of a sustained effect on mortality or morbidity. That is, it may make you feel better, but it does not seem to translate into a beneficial effect on morbidity and mortality with the acceptable safety profile. And there's the problem. You know, there are so many things that you would ask yourself, does the marijuana treat the condition? Does the marijuana make you not care about the condition? Because if I get drunk enough, I don't care about the condition.
Right.
And so in that sense, there's not a treatment there going on. There's just simply a neglect. But in this case, well, yeah, some weight gain, long-term outcomes not really changed. Chronic pain, this is a use of marijuana for centuries. Marijuana may help nerve root pain, even at very low levels of THC. Both marijuana and the pharmaceutical formulation of THC decrease pain, but the pharmaceutical seems to have a little bit longer reduction. So if you smoke marijuana, you may get a reduction in pain, but if you take the marijuana tablets, the active ingredient tablets, it may actually give you a little bit longer response to pain. Inflammation. Turns out marijuana may have an anti-inflammatory effect, and it may be useful for things like rheumatoid arthritis and inflammatory bowel disease. But again, we don't have any scientific studies proving that. It's just theoretically it could. Multiple sclerosis. I just heard where the European Union actually rejected the active ingredient for marijuana for treating multiple sclerosis. There are phase 3 trials. That's meaning the final trials in the U.S. before they look for FDA approval. It has been approved in Great Britain and Canada and several other countries for that. But as I said, the European Union decided to reject it for that indication. And then finally, epilepsy. And we're all familiar with this. I think Kentucky now has a bill that allows marijuana for treatment of childhood seizures. I believe that's correct. Out of the families who used it, 11%, two families out of 19, reported complete freedom from seizures. Eight families, that's 42% of the 19, reported a reduction of more than 80% in frequency, and six reported a reduction of 25 to 60% in their seizure frequency. That's obviously promising results. That is 19 families. That's all we know about marijuana and treatment of epileptic symptoms in childhood. Again, just no information,
right.
No science done. This was a summary of the best. This was in the New England Journal of Medicine, 19 families.
Sounds to me like, Tony, we could, you know, take the weekend and we could do some research ourselves and get close.
It's really discouraging. Now, you look at the adverse effects that we know of: impaired short-term memory, difficult to learn and retain information, impaired motor coordination, it interferes with driving skills. Now, that's an interesting thing. The question is not, does it interfere with driving skills? I think, you know it would.
Right, right.
The question is it as bad as alcohol, and do people use it instead of alcohol? So could we get a net benefit by switching from alcohol to marijuana, or do we just have now another intoxicating substance we have to dodge and duck while we're driving on the road? Hard to say. Alter judgment. They worry about that increasing the risk of sexual behaviors. I think that's a bit of a leap, but it is in the New England Journal of Medicine. In high doses, definitely paranoia and psychosis. There was just a story, was it Maureen Dowd, I believe, went to Colorado, took too much of a brownie kind of experimentally, and wound up very paranoid and psychotic. Long-term or heavy use, addiction, about 9% of users overall. Altered brain development, especially in adolescents who start using early. Poor educational outcomes, cognitive impairment, lower IQ. Diminished life satisfaction and achievement. I can understand diminished achievement. I'm a little surprised at diminished life satisfaction. And again, these are ratings. They gave these questionnaires out to marijuana users and non-users, and they had lower satisfaction scores. Chronic bronchitis, because you're smoking. And then finally, increased risk of chronic psychosis disorders, including schizophrenia, if you are predisposed. It doesn't look like it causes schizophrenia, but if you are predisposed, family history, it seems like you smoke marijuana. Yeah, it makes it a little bit more likely to occur. And again, we're trying to be as scientific and objective as we can. That's what is reported in the New England Journal of Medicine. I think any and all of those conclusions, both pro and con, are suspect because we simply haven't had enough time to study it.
So, Tony, you think with this recent legalization, and you know, I do believe in a month is when Washington comes online, do you think that means that we're going to start being able to do more research? I mean, I think we've talked about in this past that it is going to give us more research opportunities. I guess maybe what's coming to mind is all these extra research opportunities, worth what we may perceive in our minds as a risk?
Well, you know, first of all, we'll have the ability to do some scientific research. But the other thing is the public health people, it's now in their hands to try to figure out what's happening in Colorado and what will be happening in Washington State as marijuana becomes very popular. I'll tell you what is happening, and this is, to me, is absolutely fascinating. This was the Boston Globe, June 6th. The DEA in Boston is targeting doctors who have become involved with medical marijuana dispensaries. That is, you have a medical marijuana dispensary, you have a medical director, a doctor is a medical director. It's not required, but a lot of them want that medical expertise as a part of their dispensary. The DEA has been targeting those people, going to their offices and saying, look, either you give up the dispensary or you give up your DEA license, or you take us to court, because we're going to go after your license if you keep the dispensary. This is what Dr. Samuel Mazza said. He said, either give up your DEA license, give up your position on the dispensary board, or challenge it in court. He's chief executive of Debilitating Medical Conditions Treatment Centers, and they had a preliminary state approval to open a dispensary, and he's decided to give up his DEA license and just serve as an advisor on the dispensary. Now, I looked at the comments on this article, and several people were misinformed. They said, well, doctors can't dispense narcotics, so this is only be applying the law evenly. In fact, doctors can have a pharmacy on their premises that they own that dispenses narcotics. That is right. Legal in most states, as best I can tell from looking at this.
But don't they still have to have a pharmacist do the dispensing?
They do. But see, in this case, it's the exact same thing. They are on the board or the director, the medical director of a dispensary. Someone else actually dispenses, but the DEA has decided they're going to go after them. So the federal government, again, the Obama administration said, we're not going to prosecute. The DEA says, oh, wait a minute, maybe we will. And they're going after these DEA licenses. Meanwhile,
which, let's be honest, Tony, I mean, a DEA license to a physician is bread and butter, because they're treating things, especially with you, you know, in an internist position, you know, some of your major regimens are pharmaceuticals, right? I mean,
right.
They're medicines.
Right, and these are narcotic pain medicines. These are also some lower schedule substances that have possibly a potential to be habit forming, but these are drugs that you would use every day.
Yeah, I mean,
not
so
all
this is
narcotics.
Your livelihood, so right. It certainly will cause their little antennas to go up.
Right.
And take notice, because, again, if, say, for instance, medical marijuana is just a small portion of what they're doing, they're actually threatening their regular livelihood. And, you know, the DEA license to a physician is pretty important.
So hold that thought for a minute, Rick, and I got to tell you, the Associated Press reported May 30th that both Libertarian and moderate Republicans joined forces with Democrats in the House to vote to block the federal government from interfering with the states that permit use of medical marijuana. 219 to 189, they passed a resolution that went to the Senate. And as of time we went to press with this show, I have not heard anything from the Senate. It doesn't address the sale and use of marijuana for recreational purposes. That's not what it's about. But for medical purpose, if a state legalizes it for medical purposes, this bill keeps the feds from trying to attack that or to block that, as they did in Boston. This is what Representative Earl Blumenauer of Oregon, he said, told opponents. This train has already left the station. Almost 4 out of 5 Republicans opposed the amendment. It did pick up GOP supporters, including Thomas Massey from Kentucky and others. Democrats were more moderate in their opposition. So what's happened has been kind of interesting. First of all, you know, President Obama sort of took the lead on this and said, we are not going to prosecute. The DEA said, yes, we are. The House of Representatives has now said, no, you're not. And now it's going to the Senate, and we'll see where this ends up. Again, all this is in flux because these laws were passed really without us sorting out the consequences,
right.
Which, again, for an observer, it's an absolutely fascinating thing. I've never seen anything like it in my career, and I'm very interested by it, even as I am very worried about the effects of certainly even medicinal marijuana, but especially recreational marijuana.
Well, and it does. This is going to be an interesting study in the powers of, you know, separation between a state government and a federal government, because clearly in Colorado, the state's enacted laws that say that we think this is legal. Feds, on the other hand, still believe it's illegal. And so, again, I think you're going to see some great, I mean, if you're a courtroom guy, this may prove to have some great, you know, legal battles.
Yep. And then finally, as if this wasn't enough, this is from Phoenix, and again, the Associated Press, June 7th, court ruling added post-traumatic stress disorder to the list of debilitating conditions that qualified for medical marijuana treatment in Arizona. State Department of Health Services Director William Humble has until July 9th to either accept it or to reject it, and that would be appealed, allowing PTSD sufferers to get a medical marijuana registration card. 11 states currently approve medical marijuana for treating PTSD. I believe there are at least 22 that have medical marijuana in some form. So about half the states allow you to treat PTSD with marijuana. Half the states don't. This is the crazy thing, Rick. We have law judges making decisions on who gets treated for what disease because, again, there is no FDA, there is no research, there is no scientific basis to approve or disapprove it for anything. So it pretty much if there is a referendum, if the voters want it, if the legal system decides that it should be treated, this is in the hands now of politicians and judges because we have no science to make any scientific decisions.
It's almost like chaos.
It is very much like chaos. The last paragraph of
which is great because that's what we are. Health Matters, chaos.
The University of Arizona received approval from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services to conduct a long-delayed marijuana research that's been in the works for more than two decades. And so that was a part of this story. Frankly, the research is so far behind because of the federal government delaying it. Speaking of delays, it is now time to unleash the Health Matters Dancers. Please enjoy the Health Matters Dancers during our break, and we'll come back for our third and final fractional portion. More on sunburns. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, hosted by the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. Additional information on the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center is available at 606-783-6506 or online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the third and final fractional portion and my last time. Make Tony laugh.
Can't help
Rick
it,
Phillips.
Man. Your voice is, you sound like somebody out of a cow. Hello.
Hello. That's Billy Crystal.
That's right. My name is Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Pun in the Sun show, our sponsor for the final time.
You're not going to do another pun. Come on.
Okay. All right. I wanted to schedule my hernia surgery during summer, but I found out that my doctor was on summer hiatus.
That's a doctor pun.
Yeah. Do you like that?
Just not really.
Right there on top of it. All right. So our sponsor for the final
Your
time.
Your puns are no fun.
Sunscreens. And this is the CDC questions and answers on skin cancer prevention. And this fractional portion, we're going to talk about cover-ups and hats. So question.
Both of which I would recommend for you.
Just
just as a general rule.
Yeah, just a hoodie would be nice and just go ahead and wear a ski mask with it. What kind of clothing would best protect my skin from UV rays? Clothing
Thick.
That covers your skin protects it, obviously. Loose-fitting clothing, long-sleeve shirts, long pants, tightly woven fabric offer the best protection. A wet T-shirt offers less UV protection than does a dry one. This is a news flash of those kids on the beach. You get your T-shirt wet, you're going to get a sunburn, but you got a lot of other problems, too. If you're wearing this type of clothing, and if that's not practical, at least try to wear a T-shirt or beach cover-up. Typical T-shirt has an SPF rating lower than 15. So if you're going to wear a T-shirt just out on the beach in the middle of the day, an SPF 15 plus a T-shirt is recommended. Next question, does the clothing have to be a certain color? Darker colors may offer more protection than lighter colors, but the most important thing is to wear something. This is a question, and this is Rick right here asking this question. I would let you ask it, but since your voice is gone, I'll do it for you. It gets so hot in the summer, there's no way I would be comfortable in long pants and a long sleeve shirt. So what else can I do?
Go to Alaska.
Yeah, go somewhere else. That'd be one thing.
Listen to the doctors and wear a bathing suit?
According to the CDC, protecting yourself from the sun's UV rays doesn't have to be a major chore, just a matter of knowing your options and using them. Wearing a dry T-shirt is a good start, but not enough if you're going to be outside more than a few minutes.
Because then it won't be dry anymore.
That's right. If you can't wear long pants and a long sleeve shirt, boost your protection by seeking shade and wearing the sunscreen. Like I said, I think...
You're just not a big fan of long-term sun exposure, are you?
I think if you walk early in the morning, and let's face it, beach life
requires you to get up early.
But beach life, if you go late afternoon out on the beach, and you're out on the beach in the evening, that's fun. There are girls there. There are boys there. There's all sorts of things happening there, which is lots of fun, and you don't have to get out in the sun.
But the best volleyball is in the middle of the day.
Oh, man, you can do
Come
a lot
on.
More. You can last longer. Next up, will a hat help protect my skin? Are there recommended styles for the best protection?
How
Rick,
much hair do you
think,
have?
Yeah. What do you think is the best hat style? This is according to the CDC. Those
My
fashion
guess is a visor wouldn't be advised.
At the CDC. That's right. An advisor is ill-advised.
Wouldn't be advised.
There's our second pun of the fractional portion. We're doing really well. Hats can help shield your skin from the sun's rays. Choose a hat that provides shade for all of your head and neck. And obviously, that's not a visor or a baseball cap. For the most protection, wear a hat with a brim all the way around that shades your face, your ears, and the back of your neck. And
do
I will
say. Do you have a hat that does that?
Yes, I do. I have several. And I will say.
Do you look like a beekeeper when you wear it?
The top of the ears are a big problem. In my practice, I see a number of people who develop skin cancers on the top of their ears.
Wow.
Don't think about that. Actually, my daughter went to Taiwan and came back with this hat that has a billowing cloth around it that actually goes down over your shoulders. That's what they wear there, because in Taiwan, they do not want to get tan. If you choose to wear a baseball cap, says the CDC, you should also protect your ears and the back of your neck by wearing clothing, using sunscreen with SPF 15, or by staying in the shade. For best protection, what material should I look for in a hat? And here's a discouraging note. A tightly woven fabric like canvas works best. Straw hats should be avoided because they have little holes in them that let the sunlight through.
Wow.
Many of my sun hats are straw hats, I'll just tell you.
And well, then, there you go. Yeah. That explains a lot.
And then finally, remember, when you're getting sunglasses, use sunglasses that block both UVA and UVB rays. That's the best protection. This would be a wraparound sunglass because it also blocks the rays sneaking in from the side.
I bet you have some cool, cool sunglasses.
My problem is I have to have prescription sunglasses.
But I bet you got cool ones.
I got decent ones, but I don't have the best. We're going to stay on this sun protection thing because, again, it is summer. Many of our radio fans are either on their way or about to be on their way to some warm place where they're going to spend time in the sun, and we want to...
Are you going to be at the beach this summer?
I am going to the Mayo Clinic education experience in Florida.
See, I'm just going to South Carolina to be on vacation.
Okay. Yeah, I'll be farther south than you, but we'll both probably get a lot of sun when we're there. May 19th, Cancer Epidemiology, Biomarkers, and Prevention. Dr. Wu of Brigham and Women's Hospital, that's with Harvard in Boston, they looked at the Nurses' Health Study, 100,000 nurses, and looked at nurses between ages of 25 and 42 years and followed them for 20 years. The risk of skin cancer was 68% higher for basal cell and squamous cell carcinomas, and 80% higher for melanoma in women who reported 5 or more blistering sunburns between ages 15 and 25 years compared with those who didn't. So lifelong exposure of sun is a problem, particularly for skin aging, but blistering sunburns ages 15 to 25 raises your risk for both the non-life-threatening skin cancers that you have to get burned or cut off your skin, and melanoma, which is a life-threatening cancer. Cumulative radiation exposure, that's called UV flux, was associated with the other types of skin cancer, but not melanoma. What they're saying, and this is research, it's not been, not all this has been validated. What they're saying, though, is if you stay out in the sun for many, many years, you are more likely to get skin cancers and aging changes of your skin. And I promise that's true because I take care of people who are in their 80s and 90s, and you see the effects. On the other hand, that does not seem to be associated with higher rates of melanoma. According to Dr. Wu of Brigham and Women's, melanoma must have a more complicated relationship with sun exposure than these other cancers. And I absolutely agree with that. We are still struggling to figure out what triggers melanoma. But blistering sunburns, teenage years, that is a bad thing.
You know, Tony, it stands to reason. I mean, if we'd have figured it out, we'd have eliminated it. But, I mean, you know, right now all we know is pretty much what causes it. We still don't know how to stop it.
That's right. But I think sunburns, especially sunburns in young people, that's really a bad idea. And again, you keep in mind, sunburns are effectively, they're radiation burns. So you're irradiating a young person, and they have a lot of time for the ill effects of that radiation to build up. So that is not a good thing.
So what do you tell that young person who is absolutely, without a doubt, convinced in their mind that they should burn the first time of the season, that way they don't ever burn the rest of the season?
You know, what you
hope. And that is such a rumor that goes around. I mean, such a belief.
Yeah, I think what I would try to do, they all want a suntan, and that's going to be really hard to turn around. But as a parent, if you can't keep them from going out in the sun, if you can't keep them from getting a suntan so that they don't look weird, so they look like they're all their friends, at the very least, be very serious and impress upon them the seriousness of sunburns. Sunburns need to be avoided in teenage years. And, you know, I know as a teenager, when I got started doing something, as you mentioned, volleyball, if I got started playing volleyball in the sun, I'm not going in because my skin starts to get red.
Right.
It's volleyball. It's my friends. I'm going to stay out there.
If you get hot, the shirt's coming off.
Yeah. And we have to tell them that that's a bad idea for young people. That's very clear.
Now, if I get hot, I go into the air conditioner.
Yeah. I will tell you, you know, except for since my kids, when my kids were in high school and they were in sporting events, I would sit out in the sun and watch them.
Right.
And the last sunburns of any sort I got were from watching my kids.
Blame it on them.
Well, no, it was the last time I did it. I have been actually to tropical areas, but we do our early morning, late evening thing, and even in the tropics, haven't really had that much trouble.
Yeah, see me, you know, if I leave that lunch afternoon period open, I tend to eat more, so I can't, you know.
Go to a movie. Go to a midday movie.
So I can get popcorn. Okay. Good idea. Really great one there.
You're hopeless, Tony. Rick. You are hopeless. I'll just tell you that. Okay, next up. This was something I saw in New Scientist magazine. It was this month's issue, and this really intrigued me.
Has anybody ever told you read a lot?
Actually, I skim. I know I don't read it all, but I do.
You read a lot of it. You're being modest.
Okay. This is about a wristband that it actually monitors your UV exposure and allows people to soak up the sun to get vitamin D. This is what they said. This is, New Scientist as a British, kind of like a popular science journal in British. And the Britons, they live farther north than we do, and they really want to make sure they get enough vitamin D. But this is called the Sun Friend. Sunfriend, the Sun Friend. It's $50, went on sale at Wearable Technology Show in London, and it will be released, it has been released, actually, in May, general release. What you do is you input your skin sensitivity on a scale from 1 to 11. The CDC has some
Did
general
categories.
Did you just
say 1 to 11?
Yeah, do you like that?
I love that product.
Remind you of Spinal Tap, you think?
Well, I mean, you know, it's not 1 through 10, which is, you know, everybody loves 10.
Right. Well, you know, the CDC mentioned skin types 1 through 6. Type 1 always burns, never tans. Skin type 2 burns easily, tans minimally. Skin type 3 burns moderately, tans to a light golden brown. Skin type 4 burns minimally, always tans. Skin 5 rarely burns, tans profusely to dark. And then skin type 6 is never burns. So I don't know how you translate 6 to 11, but you've got to somehow, in that always burns, never tans, to always tans, never burns continuum, you've got to rate yourself on 1 to 11. And then the interesting thing about this wrist thing is the LED lights on the wrist thing illuminate as your UV exposure increases, and finally it starts flashing when it's time to get out of the sun. Now, do you think, let me just ask you, Rick, when you were a teenager, if your UV lights were flashing at you, would you abandon ship and head inside for that? It's a good idea.
No.
Okay. I mean, you could use an egg timer, which is a lot cheaper, and say, I'm not going to be out for more than half an hour or something like that. But this is an interesting idea.
But you know,
based on your skin type, then when your watch flashes, you got to go inside.
I mean, let's be honest. I mean, there's a phone now, I think the Galaxy S5 from Samsung actually has a heart monitor built into it. You know, so you can put your finger on the back of it and it'll actually measure your heart rate. You're wearing all kinds of bands now that tell you your fitness levels and, you know, how much calories you've, you know, worked off based on your exercise or your movement. I mean, we're only going to see this integration of this type more and more into our devices.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think regardless, this thing right here is obviously it's independent of everything else. It's just a wristband that
but
you wear.
But at some point, it'll be controlled through your iPhone.
Yeah, I think you're probably right, or your iPhone will be monitoring it if you don't stick it
Correct.
In your pocket.
Correct. Well, it'll be as part of an overall fitness band that you'll wear that monitors heart rate, monitors activity level, monitors maybe even blood glucose someday.
Yeah.
I mean, we're going to get to the point where technology will evolve to where, you know, and you see everybody wearing these Fit wristbands. I mean, they're the wave. You know, they're coming out right now. So I just think you'll see it.
Last article. Fascinating.
Promise. Do you promise?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely fascinating. Because we actually have a Health Matters special. We have tested this product out. My wife, a guinea pig, served for this, and we have tested this thing out. Here's what it is. Osmosis Skincare. It's called UV Neutralizer Harmonized Water. And they say this water,
it sings to you.
Water that you drink provides you with an SPF of 30, protecting you from 97% of UVA and UVB rays.
You're telling me
for up to 3 hours.
You're telling me I drink this and I turn into Superman.
If you drink this water, you will not be affected by the sun. You can spend hours outdoors because you drank this harmonized UV neutralizer harmonized water.
Wasn't it better when I said I'd be Superman? Go with me here. Can't you help?
If you take in 2 milliliters of this water, I mean, that's just a thimbleful of water, an hour before sun exposure, what happens is there are frequencies. It has frequencies in the water that cancel out UV radiation. Now, this is hard to believe. Matter of fact, it's darn near impossible to believe.
Right.
Dermatologists are skeptical.
Water
science are skeptical.
Frequency.
But it has frequencies imprinted on the water. And these frequencies will vibrate your skin in a way as to cancel 97% of UVA and UVB rays. There is no science behind this. There could be no science behind this because you can't imprint a frequency in water,
right,
and put it in a bottle. But you can get this bottle for $30 online from Osmosis Skincare. Ben Johnson, who's a general practitioner and a founder of Osmosis Skincare, he says, this water, it vibrates and it emits frequencies that cancel out the burn-causing frequencies of UVA and UVB. The most magic thing you can possibly imagine.
You know, isn't it wonderful that you just can't prove it?
Well, here's the thing that frustrates me about these products in general, Rick. People, their bodies are made to live out in the sun. Now, granted, there are some consequences of being out in the sun. They trust a bottle of vibrating neutralizer water with vibrations imprinted in it before they trust their own bodies and their own skin.
Right.
You know, you could just say, look, I think you could probably go out for half an hour and you would be okay no matter what you did, but you're going to buy a $30 bottle of water that's supposed to somehow vibrate and keep the sun's rays off you.
Is it fair to say that we could consider that a stupid fee?
Yeah, honestly, you know.
And you're going to test this on your wife.
Well, first of all, let me just say, there is no scientific data. There are no studies whatsoever. And so here's what we did. And we're going to roll the tape here in just a second. What we did is I asked my wife, and she was very gracious about this. I said, would you mind just being our guinea pig? Would you mind taking this stuff, telling us if you can feel these water molecules vibrating, and tell us whether or not you feel comfortable going outside with this? So, you know, are you able to go outside? Do you feel any vibrations? What do you feel when you drink this water?
Let's find out.
All right. Roll the tape. Well, you heard her, Rick. The weather's beautiful, and it's okay to go. Can you get us out of here?
Special thanks to Morehead State Public Radio producer Spencer Johnson and to Eric Bilbrey, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to our show, go to WMKY.org, or just visit us on Facebook. Just do a search for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show. And remember,
Health Matters can pose as much or more danger to your kid than UV rays it's protecting them from. According to a recent environmental working group study, a whopping 84% of our shows contained unsafe ingredients.
Yes, he said whopping. One of the worst and most common chemicals found in Health Matters podcasts is oxybenzone, an endocrine disruptor that can affect the nervous system and create harmful free radicals when exposed to the sun. That means every time you hear us outdoors.
Health Matters is less messy than lotion, and that's a good thing. But it's also highly flammable. Recently, a Massachusetts man suffered second-degree burns after he listened to Health Matters and then stood too close to his grill. Consumer Reports recommends that spray-on radio shows not be used on children at all. Even adults are advised to stay safe by listening to Health Matters indoors and waiting at least 20 minutes before going out into the sunlight.
Hearing that SPF 50 makes you feel safer, doesn't it? Well, you may think listening to a high SPF radio show means avoiding sunburns during a worry-free day at the park, but that's not always the case. SPF 50 is supposed to mean your kid can stay burn-free in the sun for 50 times longer than they could without Health Matters, but the FDA disputes the validity of these claims.
Clothing, hats, and shade do a better, safer job of protecting your kid from the sun than any radio show. The editor of the Journal of Cosmetic Dermatology doubts the safety of Health Matters and recommends that it be used only on exposed areas such as a face and hands, and of course the ears. Cover up the rest of your body with tightly woven clothing. Limiting Health Matters in this way should prevent most of the health risk associated with ours.
Whatever you do, do not take Health Matters lying down. Get out this week, make a healthy change in your life, and tune in next week for our exciting series on the health benefits of procrastination on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, hosted by the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. Additional information available online at neahec.org.